Welcome to Family Talk with your hosts, psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Could your marriage use a little tune-up? If so, we're glad you're with us here at Family Talk, because today we have some advice in store that will strengthen an already solid marriage or maybe even save a rocky one.
It's what we're all about here, Ryan. At Family Talk, we want to share the decades of wisdom that your dad has been writing and speaking about for all of these years. And today we will conclude the conversation we had with him featuring some of those outstanding principles he wrote about in Love for a Lifetime.
Well, we've got a lot of ground to cover, so let's get right to this conversation that first aired back in May during only our second week on the air. And Luann, I heard we've added over 200 more outlets.
Well, we have, and that means many people listening right now had not found us back in May. That's exactly why we are returning to it. This is crucial content for every marriage, as you said, Ryan. A new one, an old one, a solid one, a rocky one. Here now is our conversation with Dr. Dobson on this Family Talk broadcast.
Luann, Dad, we've been talking for the last couple of days about your book, Dad, Love for a Lifetime. Huge bestseller, still available in bookstores. It's also available at myfamilytalk.com. We ended yesterday with the three C's, and today we want to talk about the 12 marriage killers.
Well, that's another topic that I feel strongly about. You know, I don't want to be self-serving about the book. But there is so much content in what is not a large book. It's really kind of a gift book. But this is another one that we could spend literally weeks on. Marriage killers. What are those factors in a marriage that are so dangerous to the long-term stability of your family? And so why don't we just burn through them? We're going to have to leave out some of the important content.
But as they say, Doctor, they're all in the book. And I don't know, it just kind of occurs to me that marriage killers is kind of a downer way to start a broadcast. But really, what we want to focus on is the fact that these can become positives if you recognize them and avoid them. So let's get started, Doctor. What's number one?
Number one, and I put it at the top of the list for a reason, is overcommitment and physical exhaustion. That is a marriage killer. And who overcomes it completely? I don't know anybody who isn't running too fast. In this culture, we live in this fast-paced society where there is so much opportunity out there and so many things to do. And by the time you've met the obligations to your church and to your job and to your own body, you know, to jump along with Jack every morning and and then taking care of your family and your kids and going to the doctor and doing all that stuff, there's not enough hours in the day, and I get tired just thinking about it.
Well, Doctor, I think women especially, I can speak for myself, we fall into that trap of kind of feeling like the busier we are, the more important we are. And if I'm doing more things at the school and I'm teaching Bible studies at the church and I've got my kids everywhere and my list looks pretty long, I feel pretty good about myself. And that's just a myth.
Well, and the whole culture takes you in that direction. They make you feel like you've got to get this done.
Well, and culture also makes women feel like being a mom isn't enough. You need to add a bunch of things on your plate, as if Luann, four kids, isn't taking a full-time job, let alone you've got a full-time job.
It's got to look good on my resume.
Well, let me tell you what concerns me and why I call it a marriage killer. Because while you're involved in all that extraneous stuff, your relationship with each other can drift apart. You don't have time to talk to each other. You don't have time to take walks and be together and listen to one another. And that's very important to women particularly. And I tell you something else, the sexual relationship in marriage suffers because you don't do anything as well when you're tired, when you're too worn out, when one's got paperwork to do and the other one is waiting around. And furthermore, for women, boy, I could talk about this for a long time, the emotional relationship of marriage is directly correlated with sexual response. And if you are not talking together and being together. Yeah, do you remember Kevin Lehman wrote a book called Sex Begins in the Kitchen? That's what he's talking about.
It is.
It's when a guy will come in and help with the dishes and they're talking about the kids. A man can get along without that. I mean, what he sees is enough. But for a woman, it's not enough, and she feels used.
And Gary Smalley even talks about his wife thinking he was very sexy when he played with the kids, because that took that burden off of her, and she was attracted to him.
I don't understand that, because Gary's a neat guy, but he's not sexy. I'm sorry. That's my view, and you would expect it to be.
You know, I've heard Laura's friends say things like that, though, which was a surprise to me. But you talked about in the book, in the three C's of communication, how men have a certain number of words per day, and women have a much greater number. For people like you and I, Dad, who talk during the day as our job, sometimes I get home, I'm done talking.
Oh, I'm just getting started.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm neglecting Laura if I won't limit that so I've got enough time to communicate with her at home.
Another component of this that I've written about a lot, including in this book, is that children require enormous amounts of time. They can't raise themselves. Mm-hmm. They need involvement every day. You're teaching them when you don't even realize you're teaching them. Mm-hmm. They're picking up things by osmosis. And if you're worn out when you're home and you're not talking to the husband and wife, you're not modeling what it means to have a good marriage, and the kids are feeling lonely, and millions of kids are lonely today, they drift into trouble.
And the challenge is getting worse, Doctor. I know I just got an iPhone. Okay, you can take that thing anywhere you go, be on at any time of the day, and there are your kids sitting right next to you. What an opportunity, 10, 12 minutes in the car going to the store, and I'm going to talk on the cell phone to one of my girlfriends that isn't even
that's
there.
So good.
There's a child right there.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, Laura and I have a rule. When I get home from work, for the first hour and a half, I put my cell phone in the bedroom and don't pick it up.
Whoa.
And I got to tell you, I didn't think it would be as hard as it was. And now it's a habit, so it's not that big of a deal. But in the beginning,
that's why I can't reach you.
It is.
That time of day.
Yeah. Because I, you know, because Lincoln, when I'm leaving work, I'm thinking about, oh, I forgot to tell that person this. Or, oh, I've got to just send one more email or one text and we'll get the last part of the day done. He doesn't understand that. Mm-hmm. All he knows is that Daddy came home, and instead of playing with him, I'm doing something on my phone. Mm-hmm. And it's priorities.
Well, I think people can understand from these few illustrations why overcommitment and physical exhaustion was listed in the book as number one. I believe it is the big marriage killer, and it's especially devastating to young couples where they're trying to build a home or get enough money to buy one or to start a business or to finish school or to do all these foundational things that lead to later life. And you can just forget what you got married for, and we've got to move on.
Right,
yeah.
Number
well,
two.
You just, you, well, you almost just introduced number two. You said trying to find enough money to buy a home. And number two is?
Yeah, the second is the excessive credit and conflict over money and how it's going to be spent.
It's a good thing I never deal with that.
Yeah.
My dad always said that the reason that married couples have so much trouble with money is, first of all, because there's not enough of it usually, but also because they have a completely different view of money. He gave the illustration of how my dad could spend whatever amount of money it was then to buy a box of shotgun shells. And he would go out and spend an afternoon and shoot all the shells. And he would come home, and he's had a good time, and he spent what would be now about $10. But if my mother went out and bought a potato peeler that didn't work, it was a waste of money from his view. His was not a waste of money. Hers was. So it's how you look at value.
Wow. Yeah, it's true. You know, it's just a totally different perspective on how you spend your money.
And it is the view that you're entitled to have it all very quickly, very early in life, and then you get into a hole you can never get out of, and you start fighting over it. It's a marriage killer.
It is, for young couples and older couples who get married, because for people that got married later, like Laura and I did, we had completely different views on how to spend money. I was 35 years old. She was 30. We were adults at that point. Or you get someone that gets married young who has no idea what money is. You're being thrown credit cards left and right, and you get into this super debt, and then you don't know what to do.
Yeah, I appreciated the fact and admired the fact, that Ryan, that you and Laura bought a fairly small, fairly inexpensive house. You could have been house poor.
Yeah.
You could have qualified
for more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could have qualified for more than you spent.
It was surprising how people were shocked that we didn't upgrade from the house that we were in. We had gone from a 900 square foot apartment in California to renting a home that was huge. We didn't need that much space. And so when we bought a house, that was your advice, and I am so glad I took it.
Because you're not burdened by it.
We don't even think about the mortgage. It's so low.
Yeah. Number three is selfishness. That will destroy a marriage within months if there's no give and there's only take. Mm-hmm. I said in the book there are two kinds of people in the world, the givers and the takers. Mm-hmm. When a giver marries a giver, you've got a great relationship. Mm-hmm. When a taker marries a taker, you've got big, big problems.
Well, and when a giver marries a taker, you've got two people that are always unsatisfied.
That's right. And one's feeling taken advantage of, and the other one doesn't understand why. Mm-hmm. Number four, it has to do with the interference from in-laws. You know, the failure to really get emancipated before marriage is a big deal. We did another poll on adults and their parents some time back. And what happens when the in-laws are still involved in the lives of the kids to an unhealthy degree? Mm-hmm. You know, it's wonderful to have grandparents there for the kids and to be nearby. And I'm thankful, Ryan, that you and Laura live here and mm-hmm. we can be with Lincoln and help to raise him. But this poll that we took was very revealing. I thought most of the people who wrote and talked about their relationship with their in-laws were going to complain about their mother-in-law or father-in-law. Yet that didn't happen. Mm. The majority of them talked about their own moms and dads
and why
they wouldn't let them go, and they interfered, told them how to spend their money, told them how to live their lives, told them how to raise their kids, would not let the wife come into the kitchen mm-hmm. because she didn't know how to do anything. Mm-hmm. Great resentment over that. You should have seen these letters that came back over that issue of a woman with her mother, a man with his father, or cross-sexually as well. And it was not the in-laws that were the problem. That was a surprise to me.
Well, I think you've hit a nerve right now. I'm sure someone's listening saying, I've got that. What do they do about it?
What they do about it is emancipate themselves.
How?
You have to be willing to take the criticism, the anger, and the pressure that the older generation can put on the younger generation. Mm-hmm. And you just have to say, Mom, honestly, that's our decision to make. Mm-hmm. You know, you had your opportunity to raise the kids and you did it well. This is ours. Mm-hmm. Let us do it. Let us be who we are. And we will give you your share of the time. But at Christmas, if we have to go to the other family, you have to understand that. You know, you just have to draw lines. Mm-hmm. And there will be anger.
Yeah.
There'll be harsh things said, and there'll be a breach, and then you'll get over it.
Yeah.
But until then, you're still a child.
Well, it's that boundary. You've got to set boundaries, and you've got to stick to them.
You do, and it's a very hard thing for both generations to deal with.
Okay, Doctor, we're about halfway through. What's number five?
Number five is unrealistic expectations. Now, that's a killer when you come into marriage thinking that something is going to happen and it doesn't. And the disappointment and the bitterness and the disillusionment that ensues can erode the relationship before it even has a chance to get on its feet. This is why I strongly believe in very competent, extensive marriage counseling before you get into it, because you don't know what those expectations are. You come into marriage and discover them. Go back to an issue I just raised, that at Christmas time we're going to be with my parents. And if you haven't talked about the expectations, you have a fight over them. Mm-hmm. Someone said that most conflict in marriage comes from differing assumptions. You assume something about your spouse's attitude. One of those areas of disagreement and misunderstanding has to do with the wife working today. Mm-hmm. The man may have counted on his wife working for 20 years or 30 years or maybe for a lifetime. And he is already calculating that money into their budget. But she's thinking, after I have a baby, I don't want to work. I want to stay home mm-hmm. with that child. And there's tremendous pressure at work and financially today for a woman to return to work within sometimes 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got this ache to be with her baby, and she knows how important it is. And so they begin to fight over this. Mm-hmm. It's differing assumptions. Talk them through in advance so that you don't get surprised.
And that's a major one, Doctor, but I'm thinking of the petty little ones that arise. Something as simple as, well, I just assumed we'd eat breakfast together every day. Yeah. And then he gets up one day and goes to work and doesn't even say goodbye because she's still sleeping. And she's in a tiff all day because of that. Yeah. Not that I'm revealing anything.
Anything personal about that?
Let's just move on.
Well, one for Shirley and me was the fact that I was working at USC School of Medicine. We had a baby, and babies are an awful lot of work. Mm. Shirley was home all day, and I would come home, and she would make dinner for us, and then expect me to clean up the dishes. Mm. I'd already put 10 hours in. Yep. I'd driven the freeway through Los Angeles traffic, and I assumed I had done my share.
You're done.
And I was done. I wanted to be with the family, but I didn't want to do those dishes. Mm-hmm. That's a petty thing.
But looking back, did you assume right or wrong?
Oh, I was dead right. What do you mean? But I'll tell you why. Because we were doing a little better financially then. Mm-hmm. And I was willing to pay for Shirley to have mm-hmm. extra help so that she was not worn out when I came home. Mm-hmm. And Shirley likes privacy. She didn't want anybody in the house. She wanted me to do it. And so that little thing became a biggie for us.
Well, and that's why you say premarital counseling is so important, because that's no matter how much you get, you're still going to run into these issues after you get married. But beforehand, you can learn how to communicate, how to deal with them, how to try to assume the best in the other person. And when you make a mistake, apologize, talk about it, and move on.
That's what a good marriage is all about. It's not a relationship where you don't have these problems. Mm-hmm. It's one in which you know how to deal with them.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what's number six?
Number six is what I call space invaders. And there isn't a human being in the world who would know what that means without reading the context, which I've described in some detail in the book.
So we don't have to hum the theme to Twilight Zone.
No, or play the
I'm going to tell you. Yeah, I'm going to tell you. It's even difficult to understand it, to describe, but I'm not referring to aliens from Mars when I talk about space invaders. I'm talking about those who violate the breathing room required by their partners. Now, this is a tough one to understand, especially for a woman to understand about her man. They begin to suffocate each other. Mm-hmm. They destroy the attraction between them when they do that. Some people need to just oscillate a little bit. Your relationship moves out and it moves back in. And there is this sine curve for both of you. If you don't do that, you burn out the relationship. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there are people old enough in our audience, and even if you are, to remember Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, who were consumed with each other. They got married and they were together all the time. They did films together. They traveled together. And they burned each other out. You need to allow room for breathing. There is a time to be able to watch a football game as a man.
Oh, now you're on dangerous ground.
Now I'm talking about
it.
And you know, after I've talked all day long, then I have a time where I don't want to talk a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But I can't make that an excuse for not talking at all.
That's a fascinating
It's finding
concept.
The balance there.
It really is, because the woman naturally thinks, oh, I'm rejected. He doesn't want to be with me. But that's
this
not the case.
This is a tough one.
Yeah.
This is why I call it a marriage killer.
It is. But Laura and I have identified that with us. I call it cave time. If I've had enough, Laura sees a look in my face and she goes, you need cave time? And I go, I do. I just need some time. You know, and she'll say, okay. And the other day this happened, and she took Link and went to a neighbor's, and they played for about 45 minutes, and I did nothing, watched TV, ate some food, didn't talk to anybody, and then I felt better. Yeah. And then I can jump straight back into the family. They came back. We did stuff as a family the rest of the
but
night.
But you got to come back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And many people don't. Mm-hmm. Many guys will just sit there and veg and look at the TV the whole weekend. I heard of one couple that developed what they called an equal time amendment. for each minute that you watch television, you've got a minute with me. And they systematized it,
well,
and they solved
deal.
The problem.
That'd be a good deal on Super Bowl day, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be a huge deal. You know, some couples deal with that, though, when they're talking about problems. Some people want to talk about that issue right now. Let's deal with it. Let's get into it. And the other person needs to think about it for a while.
That's a good point.
And then come back and deal with it because they feel too much pressure in that moment. You need to separate, breathe a little bit, then come back and talk.
Now, I talked about Space Invaders in some detail in another of my books called Love Must Be Tough.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Luann, we have, I think, hinted at the fact that in these early days of Family Talk, and maybe beyond, we're revisiting some of the things that I've written through the years and to lay those fundamentals in there again, because we do have a younger audience because of your work, Ryan, on your radio internet broadcast. And we want to draw more them. And so we're going to be talking about these, but they relate to grandparents and they relate to the older generation as well.
So there's a couple of titles. Love for a Lifetime is what we're talking about today, and then Love Must Be Tough.
You got it. And there are 31 more.
There's a few others in there. All right. What's number seven?
Number seven is alcohol and substance abuse. These are killers not only of marriage but of people, and they must be avoided. I'm not going to take the time to elaborate on that. They're well known. We might do a program on that subject sometime because there are new methods of treatment and new pharmacological approaches and other things that can help you deal with it. But we're not going to talk about it now, except it relates to number eight, which has to do with other addictions, pornography, gambling, other things that can grab you and hold you. If you let one of those snakes in your life, in certain people, some are more vulnerable than others, that viper will come around and bite you. Gambling, for example, is highly addictive. The mail we have received from people whose lives have been destroyed by gambling is not highly publicized, but we hear about it. I am a person who I know would be very vulnerable to gambling. I went through the gambling commission. I learned a lot about it and have tried to share that with others. But I'm a game player. I've always been a game player. I'm a highly competitive person, whether it's basketball or tennis or whatever it is.
Cards, ping pong,
I like
backgammon.
I like to compete. You do too.
I do.
And,
I do.
And so I'm a natural to get hooked on the game playing aspect of gambling. Some people even call it gaming. And for that reason, I know it. And Shirley and I have, when traveling and being in Nevada and other places, been in hotels that had slot machines. I have never put one quarter into a slot machine, even though the hotel owners will give you rolls of quarters. So I've never allowed that snake into my life because it can harm me if I never give a place to it. And boy, we really ought to talk sometime again about pornography because that one is a killer.
Yeah.
That's not only a killer of marriages, but again, it's a killer of people.
We will come back to that.
We definitely will. So you get the point. There are things that you shouldn't expose yourself to. And if you can handle it, can your kids who watch you?
Once again, we're going to run out of time. So
we are out of time.
Quickly, what's the last four?
All I can do is name them.
Okay,
but
sure.
They are in the book, as they say. Number nine is a combination of dangers having to do with sexual frustration, loneliness, low self-esteem, which all lead directly to the greener grass of infidelity. That is a biggie because they are connected. And those things all flow together. Number 10 is business failure, which can undermine a relationship. The man gets discouraged, he gets depressed, and he doesn't want to give and doesn't want to talk. And number 11 is business success.
Well, that's interesting.
If it all goes well, it can undermine a relationship because you're totally absorbed in it. And number 12 is getting married too young. That is so important. I mean, the statistics on teenage marriages are overwhelming. I mean, it just rarely works. It works. There is a such thing as love at first sight, but not often.
And we really rolled through that list of 12 marriage killers pretty rapidly. If you missed any of those, or if you want to revisit them, those will be available at our newly designed website, myfamilytalk.com.
And while you're there, you can request two great marriage resources we have to offer. One is the book we've been discussing today, Love for a Lifetime, and the other is a special edition of my parents' devotional, Nightlight. It's been put together to honor my parents' 50th wedding anniversary, and if you donate $50 towards the mission of Family Talk, both my parents will sign it for you.
That's so awesome, Ryan. I appreciate them doing that. I know both of those books will be helpful to listeners. Again, myfamilytalk.com, or give us a call, 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825.
And we'll see you next time.